Hello, hello. Thanks for listening to Guidance Counselor 2.0. Listen, I want to give you a quick rundown of what this podcast is and what you're about to get into as you listen to these episodes. We had guidance counselors in middle school. We had guidance counselors in high school, but we didn't really have guidance counselors in college. And now as professionals, we don't really have anybody to turn to ask a quick question, to learn something about the job search or to navigate your career. And so that is what I want this podcast to be for you. I want it to be a tool for you to navigate the job search and your career. So that being said, I hope you enjoy this episode. And if you need to reach me, Taylor@vaco.com is how to get in touch with me. Old fashioned email, social media at TDESSEYN. And finally, please rate and review this in the App Store because I want this to be discoverable for others so they can navigate their careers. Hope you enjoy the episode. Chris, who are you? What do you do? And we'll go from there.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, Taylor, and glad to be here. My name's Chris Rathgeb. I am the CTO of a startup called Curemint. We are in the dental space. We do kind of dental procurement, cost management, technologies. Me personally, you know, I'm a software engineer. Been doing software engineering for the last 20, 25 years, as long as I can remember at this point. I love what I do. And
that is evident.
I love what I do.
Nicole, it's great to see you. LinkedIn user. Good morning, Taylor. Welcome, Chris. We are international this morning from Nigeria. I love it. It's great to see you, man. So, Chris, let's go ahead and dive in. And Chris and I were chatting off air, and Chris has a bunch of great thoughts on a lot of different things. And so I want to start a little bit early today because we have so many thoughts, and I want to hear Chris just kind of spill it. But the first thing I want to talk about, Chris, is good engineering culture. I think the more I've interviewed hiring managers and senior level leadership like yourself on the show, the more I realize it's not perfect. It's really hard to do. I think engineers are a different breed, especially after recruiting them for a while. Just give me some general thoughts just to kick it off on how to build good engineering culture.
Oh, man. I think that it really depends and starts with values. That's the beginning of it. I think, you know, you got to have good, solid values for your company before you can kind of build an engineering culture. I think that, you know, when you know who you are and what your like identity is as a company, you can represent that in and you live it authentically, and you can represent that in what you do. Right. Then, you know, it becomes a beacon for people that want to who maybe have similar values. And align with the way you think about, you know, different aspects, you know, at Curemint, for example. You know, we've got you know, our values are team first, maniacal pursuit towards greatness. We want people who want to grow.
Right.
You know, compassionate candor. We want to be honest about where we're at. Diversity is more than a word. Have fun. Little things matter. These are our values. And I think that, you know, when looking at people, you know, we talk about our values during our hiring process. And I think that as a result, we find people who kind of align with these values. And that's kind of like the starting point.
I love that. Well, and you answered the question I was about to ask about, you know, we talk about values a lot. You know, what are some things you're doing within your organization? You already answered it, which is great. Let me ask you this. I think one of the biggest issues that I see when it comes to the engineering culture is there's a lot of me, right? I think it's difficult to build high performing engineering teams because at the end of the day, I think there are some engineers out there that have egos that want to be right, that think their solution is the best solution. So how do you balance that with getting like good talent, but then also having them kind of accept your values?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, one of the things that is really important there is defining success, like what success looks like on your team. I think this is probably one of the biggest in my career, probably one of the biggest swing and a miss that most engineering organizations I've been a part of absolutely miss on. And, you know, the ramifications of missing on this are you end up with engineers who kind of do what they want in the way that they want, or you end up in a situation, and I, you know, I'm talking to everybody out here who's listening in. Have you ever been in a company where, you know, things seem to be going well, but then out of the blue, they're like, we're going to let you go. And it's like, well, why? Like, what did I do? Right? Like, I don't understand.
I was about to say all the damn time, but I haven't gotten that, but I've heard that all the time.
Like, and to me, it's a function of like defining success and being explicit about it, right? Like talking about what does it look like to be successful on this team and putting intentional thought into that.
Right.
You know, and this is a thing that we've done, and I think it's been very, very powerful. You know, and we've done it. Unfortunately, it's been a learning process, right? We were that company at the that was like, you know, not doing a good job of defining success, and you know, it resulted in, you know, maybe not the best experiences for people working with us, and we learned hard lessons and have adapted and grown over time, and now one of the things that we do is, you know, we have very clear and like explicit like definitions of success in a role. It talks about different like 11 there's 11 different like points, and we put a lot of thought into this.
I was about to ask, and we don't have to go super granular, but like can you give me like one example of what a success looks like on your team?
So you know, 11 different points. We've got team engagement. Things like participating in team discussions, engaging in our team Slack channels, jumping in to assist in others in, when they need help, presenting dissenting opinions, things like that. We've got planning and estimation, and that's, you know, that ability to kind of, you know, document what you're going to do, be intentional about it. You know, we expect people to create build plans and execution plans and estimate what it's going to take to do that. Being very clear about time management and intentionality, not getting dragged down rabbit holes that, you know, we're not necessarily planning for, and like creating, you know, process around, okay, that's not to say that this is not important. Like, let's document it and like be intentional about when we chase down these rabbits. Maybe this is very, very important. And actually you discovered this. That's great. Progress tracking, you know, we expect people to kind of keep their tasks up to date, to be pruning their plan regularly, updating it, you know, communicating those updates to people, you know, showing off their work as they go, like just really, really defining each of these things. Issue management is another one of the areas where, you know, we've come in and we've talked a little bit about, like, you know, we want to know about issues. Issues are important. They're the kinds of things that can manifest and blow up and cause a lot of, you know, if they go unnoticed, they could cause even, they can grow and fester and become even worse issues.
Right.
And so we define, you know, we want to help people on the team grow and be able to recognize issues more quickly and resolve issues that are within their power to resolve and surface them to other stakeholders when it's kind of not in their power to resolve.
That's awesome.
You know, defining what it means for work completion, documentation, you know, personal growth, automated testing, code quality, pull requests.
Yeah.
Like very, very kind of detailed. This is what success looks like.
That's awesome.
And if you go through that effort and you put the thought in and behind that process, I think one thing happens is, you know, people who don't like align with that self-select out, which is not a bad thing. Like maybe they're you know, great in some other organization, and then, you know, people who really do align with it appreciate it, and it helps retain them longer, and then it also acts, like I said, as a beacon to kind of bring people to you.
I love that.
So I think that's a big part of it, is just knowing and making it clear what success looks like. And we put all these things in our job description.
Do you really?
Literally lay it out in detail. Here's everything we're looking for, right?
You know, I'm big on job descriptions. You know, I think job descriptions are the first indicator of your company culture. And I don't think people realize that. So props to you for putting all that in there. Wanted to obviously get to some people, say, hey, we've had a bunch of people tune in since we've been running our mouths. Let's see here. Nicole, it's great to see you. Erica, it's always great to see you. Kenneth, another individual from Kenya this morning. I love it. Chris, what's going on? Alyssa, love the value of compassionate candor. I love that so much. Christina, is it Friday yet? Yeah, you're not kidding, girl. I'm dragging today. What else? Yolanda, good morning. Christina comes in, their definition of success is different, and that's okay. Going back to obviously expectation setting, and I love that. And I love what we talked about. For those of you who are tuning in, like Chris just kind of went through his pillars, I would call it, his values within his organization. And I that was teed up because I asked the question, is how do you build good culture with an engineering department where you have a lot of me attitudes, right? And I love what Chris said. I think it self-selects out, which is incredibly important. Chris, I know it's already March, right? So what are y'all doing about reviews? How do you guys conduct reviews, right? Because we're talking about not being blindsided as an employee. That's something that I really try to make sure people do not feel. How do y'all approach kind of reviews and one-on-ones in your organization?
Yeah, so that has to be a weekly thing, in my opinion.
I love it.
You can't wait until the end of a quarter or the end of a year or anything like that. It needs to be an ongoing dialogue. People, one, I think, really appreciate knowing when they're doing something well and when they're on track and doing something right.
Yeah.
Equally, I have found most people are fairly reasonable about wanting to know the areas where perhaps they're not doing as well and how they can improve on that. I think one of the things that is really, really difficult is when you go into these review sessions at the end of a quarter and it's like, it's all kind of opinion based and there's no real examples or anything to kind of guide you on it. And I think this ties right back into success. Like we literally talk about the 11 things I was talking about in our weekly one-on-ones. How are we doing with team engagement? How are we doing with our planning and estimation? And because we've kind of defined these out, it's really easy to kind of have conversations of, these are areas where perhaps you're not the strongest right now. How can I help you grow there? They're doing an excellent job of issue management, then the issues are coming up on a weekly basis. And so, I try to give every direct report that I have at least an hour a week of time for one-on-ones.
Yeah.
And then each quarter we dive deeper and we really, really unpack it. And we spend about an hour and a half to 2 hours in a quarterly review session where we go a lot deeper. We talk, we don't just look at the things that are definitions of success in the role. We talk about values and revisit. We perform a bi-directional people analyzer each quarter, which is kind of a notion of reevaluating is this right for us still? A people analyzer is a tool from the EOS system of running companies. And it's a tool for kind of asking three questions and kind of asking, how are we aligning with our values? Mm-hmm. Those three questions are, do you get the job that you have? Do you understand the responsibilities, what you're supposed to be doing in it? Do you want it? Because people's wants change, right? What they want to do changes over time. And if the answer to that question is no, that's not a bad thing. Maybe there's just a different change. And that sparks a conversation about how we grow where you're at right now in some other position. And then do they have the capacity to do it? Capacity defined by, the skill set, the time, the ability, the emotional capacity, the mental capacity. Is this a job that they can succeed at?
Yeah.
And so we do that in our quarterly reviews. And then we, kind of dive into, where do you want to grow?
Yeah.
Where do you want to go with your career? How can I help you get there? I think weekly conversations are a must, though.
I love that. I'm going to post too. For those of you watching, I'm posting Chris's, he sent me on our private chat, his job description for his senior engineer. I'm posting that publicly so y'all can check out. Actually, I can only post to YouTube. That stinks. I will post after this on LinkedIn so you guys can check it out about the pillars. Chris, I want to pivot for our last half of the show because I knew this would fly by. I want to pivot to, first off, I want to talk about content creation a little bit, right? So Chris and I have had some conversations over the last few months about it, why to get into it. I've admired Chris kind of getting after it. I think his content looks good. I would highly recommend to anybody who is watching, go follow Chris on LinkedIn because his content is very good. It's very engaging. Chris, talk about your thought process to get into it and why you think leaders within organizations should almost put out their own content now more than ever.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, there's a, I think there's a, I've seen an acceleration of people feeling, you know, feeling that desire and draw to put out content. And, you know, I absolutely was, am in that camp. I have a lot to say. I've been doing this a really long time. And, you know, I think some of the things that I have to say, you know, could probably help some people. And I will probably learn some things by engaging with people along the way. In my role, I need to build a team, you know, an engineering team, a highly functional engineering team. And, you know, this is probably the hottest job market for engineers in the last 30 years.
Yeah.
How do you stand out as somebody who is looking to bring people into your organization? Yeah. That is a challenge I think a lot of companies are dealing with right now. And, you know, I started making content for several reasons. That was one of them, is like, I want people to become more familiar with me and
sure.
You know, learn some of the things that I talk about. I hope that the values I talked about, the things that we kind of are looking for, come through in the content that I'm creating, and people that are aligned with those values are kind of drawn to that content.
Yeah.
I look at it as kind of a long-term game. I'm not putting out the content right now to hire people right now.
Yeah.
I'm really doing it to build network.
Yes.
To increase that, you know, reach. And then, you know, eventually over time, you know, I do think that it'll assist in building out a team.
Yeah.
And I think that'll be really, really important, you know, a year from now, and a half from now.
Yes.
After Curement, for example, has kind of gone through a Series A and we need to hire 20 engineers. And it's like, all right, well, where the heck are we gonna get 20 engineers from? Right. Like,
exactly. Me. That's another conversation. But yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly. I also think too, I give props to Chris. I've had another guest on the show, Kyle Welch. He's an engineering manager at Eventbrite here in Nashville. I would say really you and Kyle are only the two managers that actually are that are actively doing recruiting efforts. So what Kyle did, Kyle wasn't putting out content, but what Kyle was doing is he had to staff up his team. And Eventbrite's obviously a big organization. While they do have internal recruiters, at the end of the day, you can't have your own recruiter for your team, right? So Kyle knew this. Kyle opened up like sessions on Calendly to like where people could join. He said he was having these classroom sessions of like 100, 200 people that were trying to learn more about the roles at Eventbrite, right? And I think hiring managers, like we talk about the job seeker always networking, right? We talked about the job seeker, which we're going to get to in a second, about posting online and networking and going to meetups. Hiring managers have to do it too. Like, honestly, I would argue hiring managers may need to do it more right now than actual job seekers. Because if you're a job seeker, you can kind of just like open it up on LinkedIn and people are going to call you. Hiring managers, not so much. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think that what you're talking about is what I see is probably the largest dysfunction in hiring process right now. And that is that too many organizations think that like trying to bring talent into your organization is the job of HR. And it's not. You know, if you're looking at your hiring process and you think that, you know, let me make a job description that's a copy of a job description from 5 years ago that I didn't put 5 minutes into and pass it off to my HR team who's going to treat it like a sales funnel and filter down the candidates that are going to land on, you know, my actual interview process, you're probably the ones that are complaining about finding people for your company. If you're not
I am cutting that sound clip and I am blasting that.
If you're not getting your, you know, rolling up your sleeves and getting out there and talking with people and like advocating directly for your team, then what are you doing?
So true. So true. I love that. And I want to, I want to pivot a little bit now to the job seeker a little bit. And I'm interested in this too, because so this is something I've been fascinated with, right? I think we're all defensive in nature. I think we as human beings don't like to be called out. Just to be open and honest, like I struggle with it. I'm in counseling just to try to not be so defensive and quick off the trigger if somebody says something to me. What I've been interested in is interviewing developers is, I mean, essentially like their developers have to have their code critiqued. And sometimes in front of a lot of people. So what's your biggest advice, Chris? This LinkedIn user, learning how to accept constructive criticism, working on projects, my weakness. LinkedIn user, you're not alone. This is everybody, right? You are not alone when you say this. Chris, what's some good tips for developers either early in their career or hell, just even senior in their career that they could be like, you know what, like that they can accept criticism? Like, do you have any like tips at all?
I'm gonna sound a little bit like a repeated record here.
Sure.
I think it starts with the values of the company, right? Okay. It really does. You know, I've been on so many, what I would say, engineering teams that you know, maybe had elements of a toxic nature to them.
Yeah.
And to the point where, like, quite literally, I was afraid to, like, put up a pull request, for example, because I was afraid of just getting just tarnished or trashed on that pull request from a feedback perspective. And it's almost like the pull request code review process was like this giant, like, chest pounding, like, ego dump, right?
Yeah.
Like, and it was terrifying, right? And I think that one of the things that we've tried to do is absolutely normalize the code review process from the very beginning. Everybody does it. Like, one of the first things we do when people come in to Cureman is we pair them up with another engineer, and that's their buddy. Then, you know, the other thing we do is we ask them to do code reviews for all pull requests for like the first 30 days that go through. Like, they're just getting eyes on code and like engaging in the conversation and just normalizing that everybody does it.
Yeah.
And like, we're doing it out of the sake of helping, and it's not a send and forget, which I think is one of the biggest issues with some of the code review stuff, is that, you know, a lot of times people will write their piece on their opinion, and it's like this drastic change is going to take the person probably like half the day or a day to rewrite.
Right.
And it's like, it's very easy to like launch that this is what you need to do when you don't have to go and do it. Right.
Right.
So there's an aspect built into our defining success and our values of like, if you're going to render a critical piece on that, you're going to engage in assisting that engineer in like getting that done. It's not a send and forget. You are now invested. And it's an expectation that, one, you're doing it, and two, you're investing in helping them get it there. And so in that way, it has kind of reduced the toxicity that can like grow from kind of critical code review processes.
Yeah.
Because the people who are doing the actual reviewing are now invested in assisting and getting it across the finish line.
Well, we can go in right there, because that was beautifully said. That's awesome. I love it. I love it. And Dominic, it's great to see you. Christina, normalize the code review process. I love that so much. So, Chris, what are some other tips for job seekers right now? Right. I mean, obviously the market's crazy. You know, as somebody in leadership like yourself, I mean, you kind of see it all, right? You see the people who are struggling, who are flailing, to obviously the very groomed interviewers. What are just some general tips where people can level up their interviewing skills right now?
Yeah. I think that it's about the story. You got to craft a narrative that it is a story. It's storytelling more than anything.
Thank
and everything
you.
That you
Thank
do
you.
With it is storytelling. If you can, you know, write your story down, treat it like you are literally writing a story. Make an outline that talks about your journey, not as this is the job that I did and the things that I did, but rather the path that I took and how the things in my career shaped who I am today. Tell that story.
Yes.
And tell it 1,000 times in front of the mirror to the point where you've got that story so down that like you've created versions of the story depending on who you're talking to.
Yes.
And like, let that story go. And like, you're going to be tired of hearing it, but everybody else is going to hear it for the first time. And they're going to think, wow, this person like really like is invested in themselves.
Yeah.
Invested in their growth. This is this is how this thing led to this thing led to this thing. And when you can do that, it really like, you know, polishes it. And the other thing I say on that is like, have different versions of it. Have your 30-second version. Have your 5-minute version, have your 10-minute version.
And
depending on the length of your interview or whatever it may be, choose one that you know, takes up, you know, roughly, you know, maybe 10% of the time of the interview. That'll kick things off and get you started on a good foot. It'll build your confidence while you're talking. And then the other thing I'll say is, if you can early, start asking questions. Don't wait till the end. Try to take over the interview a little bit and direct if you can get them talking.
Yes.
Then you know your job is easy at that point. You get them talking. People love talking about themselves.
Love
and
it.
So like You get them talking by asking good questions, not just any questions. Ask about the company, ask about, you know, why they're looking for this role. What does the success look like? You know, if they don't have a good answer for what success looks like, that's probably a red flag. But if you can get them talking, like the interview overall, their impressions will be much better.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. Again, I did not pay Chris to say that, but I literally posted and then Nicole just affirmed, which I love, but I literally said people should it was over the holidays. Cause I said hey, holidays are slow. Take this time to actually write your story. I literally said write or journal, because I think what's going on is the biggest thing I see. Again, I interview folks like Chris every day. I hear the same thing. People don't know how to talk about themselves. And it is the craziest thing. Now, I will tell you this, as a society, we look down right upon people if they just talk about themselves, right? So it's definitely a different kind of mindset you have to get into. But I love this, and I knew that would resonate with Christina, because Christina is really big on personal brand and story branding. But you know, for me as a job seeker, if you can come in and tell me, hey, this is where I've been, this is where I want to go, and here's what I've done in between, I mean, then it becomes a conversation, right? A lot of y'all are sitting here thinking, man, interviews suck. Yeah, because you don't really say anything. You just sit there, and then all Chris knows what to do is just grill you, because you're not having a conversation.
Yeah.
You're not having a conversation. So I love that ton. Also, too, Chris, I'm interested to hear your thoughts. Are you on, because you don't tweet a lot, right? You're just on LinkedIn. I would recommend tweeting. And yeah. If you're a job seeker, here's why. My communication has gotten so much better, because if you can communicate in 140 to 280 characters at one time, you start to realize how much fluff words you use. So that's just another tip to job seekers. I don't know if you had any thoughts on that.
Yeah, I just recently started doing a little more tweeting. Some of the stuff that I'm doing on LinkedIn, I'm copying over and re-amplifying it on Twitter. Pieces. Yep. I agree.
Yep. So as we wrap up here, and I knew this would happen, we got 5 minutes left. Chris, you know, I always leave this time for individuals. If there's any topics we didn't cover, anything that popped into your head that you want to discuss, any words of wisdom you want to leave the individuals with, just anything. So you got 5 minutes. Just spit some truth. Take us to church, Chris. Take us to church.
All right. Here it is. I think that when you're looking for a job, ask questions around how you work. I have in my career seen this same exact
how the company
works. How the company works. You know, right. What does a typical day look like? Okay. You know, what does your software development, you know, life cycle look like? What does that process look like? I feel like there's a lot of companies out there who are, you know, just sold on the idea that Scrum Agile is the only way to do it. And it's to the point where it's they're dogmatic about process. And, you know, and one of the things that I've found in years and years and years of doing this on teams is that there's something about the way a lot of companies implement Scrum Agile that creates a toxic engineering culture. And it's something to look out for. If you're an engineer and you find yourself staying at a job for 2 to 3 years, and then after 2 to 3 years, it's like, man, this sucks. And it all started out great because they're doing Scrum Agile. And the, you know, after a couple of years, it feels more like they're pushing velocity. Developers are starting to sandbag the work that they're doing on their estimations and their story points. And you just feel like you're coming to a crawl and a slug and all that sort of stuff. Then it's usually how it's implemented. I'm not saying Agile is bad. I'm not saying Scrum is bad.
I was about to say, you're going to have people come at you.
What I'm saying is that, because I absolutely think they're great. I'm saying the way a lot of organizations implement it leads to toxic engineering culture. And here's the things to look for that can avoid it. How early in the process do engineers get involved? That's really the question to be looking for and to be
asked. Do they need to be involved early?
Early. Yes. Yeah, cool. So many times you get companies that essentially kind of decide what's going to be worked on. They go into this giant context transfer session called sprint planning, where you spend 4 hours, 6 hours diving into what are we working on this week. And so many times that's the first time the engineers have ever seen that work. And then what happens is they start feeling like cogs in a wheel. They start feeling like, why are we working on this, and questioning it, because they don't have any empathy to the why. They're not involved in any of the problem solving. And the end result is that it creates more engineering burnout. And so if you find an organization that runs an agile, a scrum process or whatnot, and they're bringing engineers in before sprint planning early in the project planning process, that's the one to look for, because they're going to have a much higher chance of becoming a less toxic engineering organization.
I've never heard that. That's fantastic.
So that's my soapbox for 5 minutes.
I love that. That's fantastic. Well, y'all, thank you again for hanging out. Chris, stay on real quick when we end it. But y'all, thank you again for hanging out with us this morning on Guidance Counselor 2.0 on a Tuesday. So go connect with Chris. I will also post Chris's job description for Curement, so you can check out other hiring managers. You can check out how he writes job descriptions, includes his values and pillars in it. Again, want to give a shout out to my folks at Render ATL. Go check them out. It's going to be a blast. I will be there. All you can eat food and adult beverages. It's never a bad thing in a tech conference. So again, thank y'all for hanging out with us. Go connect with Chris. Chris, thank you for coming on, buddy. It was great hanging. And y'all have a great Tuesday, and I'll see y'all tomorrow, 9:30 a.m. Central. Y'all take it easy. Peace.
Hey, you did it. You listened to an entire episode, and I am very grateful, because you know why? There's a lot of podcasts out there. There's a lot of episodes, and I myself rarely finish an entire episode. So I appreciate you so, so much for listening. Quick reminder, please rate and review this podcast in the App Store. I want this to be discoverable to others. And the only way that happens is if you take the time right now and rate and review it. Please, like right now. Unless you're driving, then don't do it. So thank you again. If you need to reach out to me, taylor@vaco.com or at TDestin on all social media handles. And I hope you have a fantastic day.